Infants on Thrones. I'm Glenn Ostlund. And, you know, sometimes we have discussions after our discussions that never make it into an episode we originally signed up to talk about. Does that make sense? So every once in a while, we'll cobble together some outtakes and publish them as their very own special episode. And that's what we have for you today. Now, the first bit of outtakes comes from the nostalgia episode with Doug, Chelsea, Bob, Tom, myself, and a little bit of Jake before he pops off. We talk about feminism and activism and a few other isms, so yeah, that's the first part of what you'll hear. And then the second bit of outtakes comes from our recent Placebo Part 3 episode with Matthew Vernon, Chelsea, Bob, Scott, and myself. And once again, the topics of feminism and activism come up. So especially with all of this gender-based discussion that's been going on over at our website around the Placebo Part 3 episode lately, it seemed like a good time to push these things out and let you hear some of the candid discussions that we've been having behind the scenes and some of the plans that we're making to discuss these topics more better in the future. Sorry, more better-er in the future. Well, more better-est times infinity squared. Bob, Dr. Superlative, Beijing Dr. Superlative.
And I are starting to, and I have this whole push, and we like go and speak at all this feminist stuff. It's like, go make money, go get influence. You can't just be the what you did in your ward, which is be polite and be, you know, and not that you can't do that, but I mean, you're just going to get walked on. You're going to give your stuff for free. And men are making money doing the exact same thing that you're doing. And one of the issues is that we're just constantly willing to do it. So it's not anyone else's fault. It's our own fault, right? But it's super problematic.
Well, but like, I don't think you can hold yourself and quite to the same standard as you're quite more accredited to go out and speak and demand a paycheck for that than you put in the work.
Right. But Glenn, did you know you've been invited to stuff at BYU where the men, exact same panel, were getting double what she got?
Is that true?
Really?
Absolutely.
Wow.
Yeah, we made a big deal about it. There's podcasts where the dude, it's the same panel, and the dudes are making money and the women aren't. I mean, we have all of these cases. It's insane.
Yeah. No, that's
I think
that's
one
crazy.
Of the problems, and no offense, because I'm probably going to critique you, your listeners, and I don't want to right now, but one of the problems is I've been doing podcasts on Mormon Feminist Housewives for probably 5 years now.
Uh-huh.
Until I did the Infants on Throne podcast, I have never received that many contacts, that many friend requests, I gotta say. And part of me was like, what the fuck? And what it comes down to is men don't listen to Feminist Mormon Housewives podcasts.
No, we don't.
So women will cross-listen. Like, we'll listen to Mormon Stories, we'll listen to Infants on Throne, you know, we'll listen to, like, a wide variety. But men won't listen to particularly female podcasts. And so we're only getting 50% of the listeners to begin with.
Do they want men in their audience? Of course they do.
Do you want women in your audience?
Yeah, oh, exactly. Yeah.
All right, fair enough.
25% of our audience.
Those women don't even want us listening to them.
I always feel out of place when I've listened to it in the past. I always feel like, well, they're obviously playing to a woman targeted audience. So I feel like I've just walked into a woman's restroom. I got to walk back out. Well, sorry, I didn't mean to be here. My bad.
That's kind of the problem, right? I mean, this is what all. Even if you look at activism, female activism doesn't ever reach the tipping point until males participate too, which makes me really sad and frustrated. At the same time, if a man doesn't feel like he can be a part of a feminist movement, like there's a problem there, right? If you feel like you're encroaching by being a part of that, that's a problem because you're probably a feminist too, you know?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. And part of the problem is that you have to like wear a badge of honor in the name of your podcast. Like if we named our podcast White Masculine Male Podcast, and then we're like, but we want black women too. Of course, black women wouldn't intrinsically come to us at all. So.
I think that Google must have some kind of a male bias as well, because when I Googled to find like podcasts that you had been on, I didn't even know until you just now said it that you've done Feminist Mormon Housewives. Mormon Matters came up, Mormon Stories came up, you know, your TED stuff came
up. And probably Mormon History Guy, three run by men.
Yeah, those came up. So Google, thanks, Google. What the hell?
Damn sexist.
They need a Foogle.
Permeates everything. Yeah, a Foogle.
I do have to say something that's interesting, maybe for your future podcast or something, or for your listeners. I have gotten equal numbers of emails and Facebook messages about the material that we cover as in holding my own, as in like pushing back, as in kind of everyone's favorite quote is like, that's not what I said, next question.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah, that was great.
That's everyone's favorite quote. And it's so fascinating to me. And the same thing happened in Arizona. I don't think Matt's on this call, but there was a bunch of the dudes that were just like, pushing at me, you know, like just really hard, which is fine. I don't mind. But you could tell it made the whole audience feel very uncomfortable.
Oh, no, I think it's
and
great.
Then when I was able to push back, that I got just as many number of people being like, that was so cool. I was so uncomfortable. You made it all right. And like, it just, I don't know what it is. Is it that I'm female or young or like, I don't know what it is. But when I can hold my own, people are just as excited about that as anything else. I think that's interesting. No, I want to kind of break it apart.
Well, it's definitely impressive. And I think that was probably my favorite moment too. And my second is when Matt was, I think he was doing something on the gluten thing, and you're like, honey, listen. That was hilarious. That was so condescending. It was great.
Interesting. Sorry.
It was great. Oh, it was perfect.
After 40 minutes, you're just going to get the unfiltered version. Yeah.
No, I like it.
For just my little quick two bits, Chelsea, I admire it just because we need more women like you. I mean, in my little real-life circles. Yes.
Let's just say people like you. Just
in not my according to Elder Ballard.
Yeah, right.
Talk a little and then let
Right, Doug. They're going to allow me to talk a little, but then I need to shut up. So,
I mean, because you do stand out, I mean, in a crowd, at least in my opinion. It's like, wow, look at Chelsea.
Girls can talk? Girls can think?
Not just talk. We need not just talk, but like back up what they're saying and come across very articulate and persuasive.
So you don't normally.
She's got all this.
You don't normally.
She got all this facts and evidence behind her too. Like, she's a freaking freight train, dude. Get out of her way. I love it. I really do. It's like I want to teach my daughters. Like, you see this? What she's saying and doing? I want you to be like her too when you grow up.
Wow, cool. Oh, good.
Well, that's both complimentary and so sad. Like, I'm personally flattered, but I'm like, oh, damn. When every other woman opens her mouth, the assumption is, like, incompetence, right? You have to prove competence. You have to fight down barriers just to get someone to listen to you. So
see what you said, Tom?
To have a degree or a law degree or something. You know, like, I have to actually – like, I remember sitting and listening to Hillary Clinton talk, and someone, after she spoke, glowingly and perfectly go, wow, she's actually quite like eloquent. Like, what do you think? She just got where she is because of her looks. Like, what are you thinking? Of course she is.
I think that's the Arkansas thing.
She's not from Arkansas.
Oh,
okay.
Oh no, she's from she's from New York,
Illinois.
We know so much about women in power.
She's a Republican from Illinois.
Well,
she's
a Republican from Illinois. We need the dude that's like fighting back, because then it just looks like a token female voice, right? So you also need the Bob's like, come on, do we really need the Chelsea? You know, that's what I think. Okay. We're
great.
Just,
I don't want to be that role.
Token voice, no. You know?
No, but I mean, but like we, because this is other feedback that we get quite a lot. Some people will say you need more female perspective, and then other people will say, don't listen to that. Just do what you're doing. And, you know, like if we get to a point where we're having to say, all right, guys, we've had 7,000 words spoken by men, and we got to balance that out with 7,000 words spoken by women, and we've got to bring more on, and we're just like doing it to fill some arbitrary quota. That seems to me, right, it just right. like it's defeating the purpose. So I don't right. know.
At the same time, I feel like any conversation you will have as your group will be radically different with a female voice there. They will have a different perspective on any topic you'll bring up that will add value, you know, because this is a value-based podcast, sure. right? It's like the LAPD having all white people. No, there's legitimate value of having a racial diversity in the job that you're pursuing, right?
Yeah, so, and if we have three women on, we'll have three different perspectives.
Right.
You know, it's
now
not like
let's not go crazy, Glenn.
Seriously, like anybody that
we
have on.
You don't have that many binders of women. Come
yeah,
on.
We don't have that many women in binders. But I think when we get our listener essays, like we're not, you know, like there's no bias. My wife said something earlier on the podcast. She's like, I think a lot of women are intimidated, and they'd be intimidated. And maybe this goes to this response that you've been getting from people, Chelsea, where they're like, yeah, you didn't back down. You weren't intimidated. Way to go. You went into the quorum of all men and you just held your own. Congratulations. Right. I don't know.
Or that reminds
me. So do you think
you telling
that, Chelsea?
Chelsea, weren't you telling us about the meeting in Arizona where all the people who jumped up to ask you questions were men?
Yeah.
I mean, it's part of our culture, right, is that men feel both more able and more entitled to be loudmouths. Yeah.
Absolutely. And not only that, there's two other things too. You've been trained to go and get careers, to get a higher education. Your wife is most likely just as intelligent undergrad, but she's now staying home. So just that bias of having a leg to stand on is, well, he has a degree and I don't. Even if he didn't learn anything in that degree, you still have more confidence because of that. The second thing is, women are trained to be polite and not fight, and men are trained to kind of have differences of opinion. So you sit around in an elders quorum and Boy Scouts and whatever. I don't know what callings you guys have had, but you've seen a bishop disagree with the stake president or the elders quorum president or the young men's president be like, yeah, I think we should do it this way. As a female, I have never in my life seen that. So we just don't have a lot of exposure in our culture to anything of people of authority, of males, of especially white older males, like having equality in voice with them. There's just, we've never seen that or experienced
it. There's something I saw, and I think it might have been like a commercial for something, but it was the number of times that women apologized for things that, like, you know, like a guy bumps into him and the woman says, oh, I'm sorry. You know, it didn't do anything, but like that culture of submissiveness.
Absolutely. Try it. Walk down a street. I mean, I tell my students just really simple things. If you're trying to figure out privilege, race, gender, if you're not able to, so a lot of men are super smart about race in the church or even historical things. But when we get on the topic of feminism, I've known brilliant men that just don't see it. They literally just don't get it. They can't, the awareness, the cultural consciousness is just not there. And so one of the assignments I give my undergrad students 101 is I'm like, just walk down the street and don't move. Literally, do not move. Play chicken with every person you walk by and see who moves. And you'll notice how many males move versus how many females. If you're a man, you will notice everyone will always move for you, you know? And it's just one of those simple things. Same with interrupting. Try talking to someone and just interrupt them and see how often the man would let you do that versus how often a woman would let you do that. And you just begin to be aware of some of these things.
Yeah.
Right. I almost feel like we need like a feminism for men or feminism for dummies episode or something, because I alluded to this in one of our previous episodes that I'm sure Chelsea hasn't listened to because you're kind of new to Infants on Thrones, but I
only sent her links that were mine that I did, like my mini shows and stuff.
There's like 10 of them, right, but yeah.
Well,
they were Glenn's top 10 hits. Right. So.
And you didn't take like 2 days straight and only, you know. No. I have this theory because I love theories that I make up. And it's that. Okay, wait, my mind just went blank. I had this theory.
It's a blessing in disguise sometimes, Bob.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you for that.
Stupor of thought, man. Go with that. It's the spirit.
Yeah, I'm being blocked on purpose.
Feminism for dummies.
You're talking about Glenn doing a mixtape?
Yeah, okay. I remember what it was. I have this theory that people of a certain age... and I'm not even that old, just have in them intrinsic the threesome of sexism, racism, and
homophobia.
What's the third one? Homophobia. And,
how well
and
do I
we
know
can't
Bob?
Shake it.
How well do I know Bob?
See? Yeah, you knew exactly what I was going for. We can't shake it entirely. There's like, no matter what I do to pretend like I'm not sexist, I always will be a little bit. And even me overcompensating that is like making it worse in some ways because I don't do it right. So like, I might like say hi to a woman just because I'm like, oh, hey, hello. And they're like, ew, get away from me, you creep. And I'm like, oh, I was being equally, oh, I'm just weird. Sorry. Okay.
I'm overcompensating.
Yeah. So how do you... Because I grew up in that, because my parents' generation was way worse than I am, and theoretically kids in the generation after me are better, and so on and so forth. But is it a lost cause, and it's just like, oh, just own it, you're 20% sexism, or is there real work that can be done to eradicate it?
No, there's real work that can be done to eradicate it. Part of that is when we only have one black friend, every time we hang out with that one black friend, we're like really careful to like not talk about race, or to talk about race in a very politically correct way. And race is always kind of this elephant in the room, right? When we're constantly aware that this is my one black friend or one gay friend or one whatever feminist friend, you name it. So the difference becomes when we have, you know, 15 gay friends, it's no longer like, oh, my gay friend, you know, Kelly. It's, I have 15 gay friends. Some of them are really flamboyant. Some are not. Some are this. Some are that. You know, I have 15 black friends, and they all have a different personality. And so it no longer is about this friend in your room that's black. It's they have a personality. And so black becomes like the color of their hair, not their only identifying characteristic. So exposure, basically, is the best thing you can do.
That reminds me of one of the liberal Mormon badges that I wore with pride. I worked with a guy who was a gay black man. And I invited That's him awesome. To my house for dinner. Yeah.
You're like, look I'm at like, this.
Look how cool I am. Two birds
it's
with
okay.
one stone.
It's okay. I got friends that are gay and black.
Right. No, I just, yeah, I went the opposite
Such
direction that Chelsea was doing. And I just, yeah. Hey, Bob, I doubled down.
Twofer.
Yeah.
That's so fascinating.
Anyway. So then you're saying I have to like
make friends with women, feminists, stuff. And gays? Oh.
I barely make friends with men anymore. That's the problem.
Yeah. And then Bob's next question is, but how can you make friends with women and avoid the Harry Met Sally, you know, sexual tension gosh. Attraction?
Bravo, Glenn.
See?
Bravo.
I told you I know you.
Yeah, that's now fascinating. Yeah, now Chelsea has to know this horrible side of me too. Yeah. Oh well.
You can make him a mixtape like
you, you've talked about it publicly. I just didn't give her that link.
Yeah, no. I mean it's just
interesting. So you honestly think that?
I think you have to work for it. If you want to have a lasting relationship.
What if she's not attractive? You're assuming that you're attracted to this person.
Okay, here's the problem, Chelsea. If she's not attractive, I wouldn't talk to her in the first place. I'm
your
not speaking.
Your bias is attraction. Your bias is not gender.
Well, kind of, but with men, I don't care about attraction at all. So that's
well,
the
course,
difference.
You're straight. So.
No, and I'm trying to be self-aware and like, and I'm not saying that it's only you know, I might be doing a bit of a caricature, but I'm trying to figure myself out and remember myself from the past and men in general around me and how it all influences me, blah blah blah. But it's true, like there are of course women at work that aren't attractive that I work with, and they seem fine, but no, I'm just saying I have no reason to get to know them better, just like the men at work. But any women
that worth the time for you to get to know better, it's because you think there might be something at the end of that rainbow.
Oh, no, that's not how it plays out in the mind.
That's what it sounded like to me.
Nobody thinks about it, connects the dots that directly. But indirectly, all of those reasons that come together for why a man and a woman have a lasting relationship that is meant to be a friendship, those circumstances happen so rarely that you can kind of mix the correlation with the causation, so to speak, and then say it's just because, you know, I only like to be friends with women that I'm attracted to. But that's not exactly what it is. It's like a whole package deal of other things too that society supports, and not to use society as my crutch or excuse, but it's not just me seeking it out exclusively that way.
So if they're attractive and smart.
Oof. Oh, that's even better.
Smart is attractive.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, it sure is.
Well,
yeah.
Here's the biggest problem with this discussion is...
Well, there are probably more than
that's
one.
A superlative, and that's Bob's next thing.
The biggest problem with this discussion is, like, we've jumped from, like, having intellectual conversations to, like, being lifelong, lasting friends. Like,
right.
But I'm saying, like, do you have, like, intellectual peers that are female that are neither attractive nor particularly female? They're just like Tom or Glenn or, you know, that you could just kind of debate at will without having any sort of gendered bias there?
That aren't
And if
sister?
Not, that's the problem.
That aren't your sisters.
That's not. Right.
Right. Well, not really. but let me tell you why. Because
somebody take the shovel out of Bob's hand, man. I'm a ladder.
Hey, I'm being open and honest here. We're connecting.
Oh, I you're right. I appreciate it.
No. I think so this isn't exclusive to me, but I know this narrative well because it did happen to me. But growing up, I was the guy who was and Glenn knows this, and I've talked about it as well on a podcast. I was the guy who had like all of the friends who are girls who think that I'm the guy that they can be friends with, but in reality I'm not friends with them because I'm at least somewhat attracted to them, but they don't think that. They're like, "Oh, Bob, you're such a great guy. Let me tell you about my boyfriend." And I'm like, "Well, you're nice to look at, so chat away. Sounds great." That's the super cynical, you know, right, looking back right. 15 years on Bob in high school or whatever, but
right.
But none of those relationships perpetuated into or, you know, went on into adulthood, whereas all of my main good friends, they're all male, because even though we moved on and we connected with other people, there's this societal stigma that makes it so that when you move on as a female and a male and you get married in different directions and not to each other, then it's like, why would we ever be friends anymore? That's just, I mean, it's not just me who is noticing this, you know, that's just how right. the world works. Whereas men mm-hmm. continue to be friends for years and years, and it's no big deal because that's just a gender, you know.
Well, it's kind of tautological because you probably chose male friends that had similar interests, similar intellect, similar, you know, hobbies. You probably did not choose your female friends that way.
Yeah, yes and no. Some, yeah, I mean, that's fair.
You probably didn't choose your female friends based on like, man, I really love this opinion of this person. It was like, well, she's really cute, and like, I don't really like whatever the fuck she's into, but like, it's worth it because she's cute. You know what I mean? Like, you didn't give your female friends the same swath. Women have narrow margins by which they can be like accepted. And if she's ugly but really smart, you probably didn't hang out with her.
Right, but it was more. I mean, they're all shades of gray. But it was. I mean, I usually. You're right, especially the first interaction or the first layer, there's sort of this you know, circle of influence. You overlap based on if you're in the choir together or you're doing something else, and then you notice each other, you know, and there's reasons that happen independently of just, you know, Bob stack ranking looks and only going, it's more complicated. But in the end, It's not just looks. I mean, I want to give the Bob of 15 years a little bit of a pass in the sense that I did, you know, care about other things. Oh, you like that movie? Cool. We can hang out and connect in that way. And the fact that you're cute. Wow. That, you know, it doesn't take too many variables in the positive column, especially if cute is one of them, that it works out great and we can be friends. But then it's just crazy to me that that women, maybe they're smarter now, these women I knew then, or maybe they were smart all along and I didn't recognize it, but they like naively thought, or were just playing into the role, that I was hanging out with them only because I love to hear them bitch about their boyfriend. It's like, really? Really? You think that there are men like that? Because not so much. I like it when we talk about things that connect us, and I like reasons to be with you that are about more than you feeling comfortable because, you know, I'm the friend who's not interested or whatever. And right. So I think When Harry Met Sally does have some truth to it, even if it's not as extreme. But
did you ever see the Curb Your Enthusiasm episode where Larry David kind of takes this idea of attraction and he takes it to the opposite extreme, where I don't remember the exact setup, but there was one guy that he had a ton of respect for because he was with an ugly woman. And then another guy that had a really beautiful wife, and he's like, that guy's so shallow. I like that guy. I can't, you know, like, he's,
because only ugly women are smart, and like, beautiful women are stupid.
Like,
it was still this critique on looks in such a nice satirical Larry David type way that he's still basing the value of his opinion on this guy on the woman's looks, and because she wasn't physically attractive, he's like, okay, this guy's much more deep, whereas this other guy's more shallow, because only a deep guy would be with such a dog. You know, I mean, it's just it was funny. That was a funny premise.
That is pretty funny. I actually think I'd love that. I'm looking it up right now, trying to see if I could find it.
Yeah.
And I just want to say, Chelsea, one thing you said, I think is that your strongest point as of late was that not everything has to be a lasting friendship. We're BFFs forever, and I think men have issues with that sometimes, like, oh, let's just have a passing intellectual conversation with a woman. I think that alone, like, if men could
or just like a
find that happy medium.
A one night friendship stand.
Are you guys breaking up with me? Is that what I'm breaking up with? No.
Well, we were going to ask you out on a second friendship.
This might even be the second and third, depending on what I do with this, like, after discussion. There could be stuff here for other material.
Jesus, so. You've been recording all this? Oh, gosh.
2 hours, 55 minutes, and 51 seconds.
Feminist, and this is the first time in my life anyone has ever clapped when I said that. Seriously, feminism is not very popular right now outside of this room. I don't know if you know that. Feminism is not very popular, I think, because feminism is not very fun. We have a bit of a recruiting problem right now. Misogyny is very easy to recruit for. All you have to do is be like, hey, do you like boobs? Come with me, I know a place. Oh, they're gonna show them to us. A feminist can't make that offer. It's more like, hey, do you like boobs? Well, I'm not gonna show you mine, but I have written a poem about their power.
I wish I could somehow channel my inner Mormon, because I feel still very Mormon, having dedicated 25 plus years in my most active years, and even thinking about it consciously nearly every day, you know, now 35 years or whatever. I feel like there's a lot of good I could do if I could figure out a way to channel that within my own little group. But there's this crossover point that we all, now I'm feeling like I'm like zooming way in from this way zoomed out conversation we had, but there's this thing where once I cross a certain line, then it's like, nah, it's over for you. You may as well go help Africa. That's how effective you are going to be to your own people now. Like,
I'm curious to hear more about this good that like what good and what group of people are you talking about, like your family or
no, what? Wider than that. Like, I mean, this is like, I know that we try not to do this because it's not fair to talk about people openly when they're not in, when they're not part of the conversation.
We love doing that.
That's true, Glenn. That's true. But take Kate Kelly, for example. So there's kind of a different approach between Kate Kelly and John DeLynn, in the sense that John DeLynn sort of reached too far onto the outside, and then he sort of had to like backpedal, backtrack, and now he's trying to be more like, oh, forget about that part where I became more of an ex. Now I'm kind of in the middle because I want more influence, and I think I can impact things in a better way. Kate Kelly never went through that, so she just got excommunicated, and of course on the inside that's a red flag, but she's always sincerely held to being a Mormon in a way that I'm not comfortable doing anymore, but I wonder if I should have, because, you know, my little story has nothing to do with anyone and nobody cares but me and my family. But like, Kate Kelly made a lot of noise and was super effective in a way that she wouldn't have been if she just like left Mormonism before protesting outside of the conference center or whatever, then nobody would care. But she did it the way that made it so people care. And I'm sort of wondering, is there a way that I could have done that too? And makes me think.
What would your issues be that you're standing up for?
Well, I still have some angst with the way Mormons... like a big pet peeve of mine is the complete waste of resources in terms of cyclical things that you do in the temple, that otherwise there are tons of cyclical things you could do in real life that would generate electricity, for lack of a better example, you know, or just better outputs for humanity at large, rather than doing a bunch of
so like running on a big hamster wheel instead of doing 2 hours.
That's all the temple is, right? Is a fucking big hamster wheel. Okay. Let's be honest.
Catching up on sleep.
Yeah.
May as well, like, you know, power a building instead of requiring power to run on your hamster wheel, which is for dead people.
If I can channel my inner anthropologist, some people might say there's some value in the ritual.
Absolutely. Okay.
Social efficacy and capital.
Yeah. All right, I give up. See, that's where I'm like, okay, never mind. Don't listen to me.
Good job, Scott.
I'm trying to learn from Glenn, the whisperer.
The whisperer thing. Yeah.
TBM whisperer. Yeah. Anyway, so
Bob, I only have one clarification, which is that we worked so hard, and I'm like this chief strategist, so we worked so hard to never call it a protest.
Oh, you're talking about
Chelsea's on the board of ordained women,
so. Right?
Yeah, so, and I also need. I feel like I need to not make it a Kate Kelly thing, which I know is another kind of pet peeve of like, let's just make this about one person, you know? And it's like, well, it's actually, it takes a village. It's a little bit more.
Okay, but now I want to go in a different direction. Why were you trying really hard not to call it what it was?
And we talked about that behind the scenes, but like, again, let's go back to like this. I think the fundamental difference between Matt and I, which is just, I can scream outside the temple and be like, but I am right. I feel like it's almost and not that I'm accusing Matt of this, but it's a kind of the adolescent worldview of like, I'm right. Therefore, I have every right to be loud and do whatever I think because I'm right. And then it's kind of a maturing of the senses and be like, okay, that would have zero effect to stand outside Temple Square with posters, to be considered. All Mormons would do is say, look, we're being persecuted, and their strength would be revitalized.
Right.
So from a strategic perspective, we worked really, really hard. I know, you know, I took Kate Kelly to her first feminist retreat. Like, we worked so hard to kind of come at this from the perspective that would be the most effective, that would actually cause people to think and not just be dismissive, to have faithful people being the people who are speaking, to do it in a very Mormon way, right? Wearing Mormon clothes, not wearing signs, not, you know, causing ruckus,
not
but really just
pants
getting
to church.
Right. Yeah. Just getting in line and like standing there politely. I mean, we had a guy from Al Jazeera who came to the first event and he interviewed all of us and he showed up and afterwards he goes, wait, that's it? Y'all just stood in line very politely and asked to go in, and that was a big deal. Like, he could not believe that like people were upset by this because it was such an anticlimactic non-protest. But in Mormonism, like, that is the means by which we had to communicate to be taken seriously.
You know what I want? Right. I want you to do this conference. I don't know if it's too late to organize this for next week or whenever it is, but take a bunch of long-stemmed flowers and just gently slide them behind the ears of the bouncers that stand outside of the priesthood session. You know, so kind of like evoke that 60s image when they're sliding the flowers into the muzzles of the guns. That would be awesome.
Good luck. Yeah. I think this whole discussion, or this part of the discussion, can sometimes get me pretty depressed or super cynical, because I feel like I'm out. Like, there's nothing I can do for humanity now, because I'm done with Mormonism. I'm not part of any group. I'm like 35. I have no credibility. If I start and protest something, they'll be like, "Yay, you just started yesterday." And I'm like, "I know, but I'm trying to do something. And I gave too much of my life to something that now I'm an outsider." So now, you know, you're just validating that my existence of podcasting and video games is totally justified. That's all I'm trying.
No. Bob, I will recruit you. I think one thing I've learned, and I talked to Glenn about this a little bit, since being on Infants on Thrones a couple of weeks ago, is, wow, I'm getting like all these new friend requests, and people are like, "Who are you? We've never heard of you." And I'm like, "Oh my goodness, I've been doing podcasts for 10 years. Like, I have like hundreds. I can give you my like list of
10
things
years?
I've been on." Yes, like, we've been organizing, we've been protesting, we've been like, we like did this White Roses campaign, we signed these petitions, we've been doing so much stuff. But what's fascinating is that the ex-Mormon, the males, they don't typically like go watch feminist podcasts. And Bob and I talked about why this is a while ago.
I'm going to turn that into something. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I'm going to edit that first.
No,
what's fascinating about that, Bob, is like, "Oh my goodness, I am creating an organization just for you. I need you. I need ex-Mormons. I need people. We are like, there is a place for you if you are interested in any way, shape, and form of causing social change. There's a place for you, and I will find a job for you."
Okay. Now I'm getting excited. This sounds fun. Okay.
We've been doing it for years, and I've been super effective, and I have an exact role for you.
I'm just telling you to be careful, Chelsea, because, you know, Bob is the guy that believes in the whole Harry met Sally thing. So
don't go there. Who cares? I'll squeeze you in between Call of Duty and Assassin's Creed. We'll find some time for you. And we'll make the world a better place.
How do you look in a dress, Bob?
Yeah, what?
Right. How do you look in a dress?
Debatable. Okay. I don't know.
Wear a dress to church today?
This
is good.
The issue, though, and I think it'd be fascinating to ask you guys this. Just let's get back at like being able to like occupy someone else's worldview. But how many of you would feel comfortable like protesting a feminist issue of like investing time, money, energy into this thing that isn't necessarily, you know, white male, you know, beneficial?
Yeah, I would. I mean, I've got three daughters, and it's pretty important to me.
I'd be open to it. Now, I have to tell you, just be prepared for something to happen, because when I was getting my MBA, there was this like women in business conference, and they're like, "Open to anyone. We want men." And I went, and I was the only man. The only man, and people were like, "What the fuck are you doing here?" I'm like, "But the invitation said I thought it'd be kind of cool to see if that really meant what you said, and now I feel weird. Okay, I'll just find the door." So just be prepared for it to happen if you're offering the invitation.
We absolutely are, and what we find, especially in and maybe I'm taking this way too off track, but what we find, especially with feminist activism, which is such a sad critique, is that people only start taking – and this happened with LGBT allies as well. People only start taking you seriously when you do have male allies. It allows a level of credence, just like with civil rights when we began to have white allies, just like with LGBT when we began to have straight allies. So it does allow for a level of gravitas that we need. Mm.
So I've got a reaction to this, Chelsea, and I don't know if I'm right or wrong. And to me, wrong. I kind of tie it back. Probably, I tie it back to the you know, what's the best approach on this? I don't like the idea of going, yeah, I'm going to be a crusader for feminist stuff. I'd rather be like, you know what, all of the everything you've got written on your charter, I'm just going to accept it, and let's just do it. Let's just show it and not like talk about it, but just be it, you know, and make it the new normal kind of thing instead of calling it out. Is that offensive? Is that wrong?
No, I'm not. It's not offensive. It's just not super effective. But
it's why?
It's not offensive.
Why is
the status quo?
Yeah, because the status quo is by, and this is a whole other podcast, but the status quo is in by itself, in many ways, measurable ways, discriminatory. So to just be like, I'm just going to own the fact that like I'm a feminist. Therefore, it's like someone saying, well, I'm not a racist, therefore racism doesn't exist. That doesn't work.
I'm not saying that then it doesn't work, but that's my form of activism, is just by being open and not, you know,
Isn't it more pacifism than activism, though?
I don't know if it's – I don't think it's pacifism, because I think it's a conscious effort. When people say to us, you need to have more women on Infants on Thrones, I really – cringe at that, because I don't ever want to do something that is like measuring out the number of people and doing like an affirmative action kind of thing, and we've got to fill a quota. You know, I'd rather just, you know, Chelsea's an interesting person, she's really smart and qualified, we're going to bring her on. It's not because she's an activist or because she's a woman that we're doing it, it's because of who you are and what you have to say and what your background is, you know. So to me, I don't know, and that it's not addressing the larger fact that there is that bias against women, and it's probably not getting you a bigger honorarium when you go speak at BYU. You know, you talked about that last time we talked, but I don't know. And one of the things I think I'm reacting against is when John DeLynn got on the crusade about we're gonna do every single episode now that's like a gay rights episode thing. It just, I just got tired of that. I'm like, I don't know. Maybe, I don't know. I feel like I'm digging myself a big hole now.
No. I feel like one of the issues is that men who are like trying to figure out a lot of these issues don't have a place where they can speak honestly without being afraid, like where they're walking on eggshells and they're afraid that they're going to say something wrong and be criticized. And so then they can't really figure out these ideas in a safe space. So I think that that's absolutely an important thing to create, is a safe space to talk about these issues where you're not going to be jumped upon if you say something that's quote-unquote wrong. So I absolutely don't think you're saying anything offensive. I think, you know, I would take...
But are you saying that just because you want to create a safe space or because you really think that?
Well, I mean, I would take issue with some of what you're saying.
Then do.
I mean, okay, well, I disagree.
Then tell us more about why you don't like gay people.
Yeah, right. Me?
I mean, what I disagree with is this idea that, like, well, in order to be a true feminist and not have a token female, I will just wait till it naturally happens so that it doesn't look like I'm just like doing affirmative action. But one of the problems with that is, and this is clear in just like, you know, our CVs, which is there's women who have been doing, you know, podcasts and blogs and like super Mormon activism, and we've been running campaigns and we've been doing retreats and we've been doing stuff for years that have never crossed your radar. And that's just because we're in two different worlds. And so they're super qualified women, but because they're not being sought out, like they would be smart and capable and interesting. And I could give you 20 names right now that would like totally revolutionize your podcast. That would be amazing for all parties concerned.
Well, then why haven't they submitted listener essays? Because you say we're not
right.
Like,
and we're not listening to you.
Yeah. We've got an open invitation for anybody to come on and do things, you know? So it's not like we're not seeking them out, but I don't know.
Right. Our Venn diagrams aren't crossing. You're not listening
to
us. We're not listening to you. Because why would I listen to you?
Because we're awesome.
No offense. I mean, you are awesome, and I absolutely love it.
Mormonism
3.0. But when I'm sitting here listening, I don't necessarily hear my perspective being represented very often, right? And so it takes that first step of having someone on your panel to draw in listeners who are like, wait, wow, I really want to listen to that right now because that's someone in my world. So the only issue I take is that this will resolve itself on its own. I disagree. I think there needs to be actual measurable steps that you take.
Yeah, that's not
that then create the world.
Right. I guess it's not. I wasn't trying to be passive about it or say I'm not taking steps. It's just I'm showing instead of telling. Like I'm just doing it instead of going, hey, everybody, I want you guys to see exactly what I'm doing right here. You know, we're raising the profile of women. You know, and that becomes our you know,
mantra
or, you know, whatever. It's just we're doing it actively, passively, actively doing it. But we're not, I don't know, being preachy about it. I don't know.
I get that. And that probably stems from some of your John DeLynn baggage.
Ooh, let's talk about that.
I don't really have John DeLynn baggage. I've got other John baggage, but not John DeLynn
baggage. Good night, Glenn. I would like put a picture of you on a button and wear it around if you're like, dude, we need more women. And guess what? We need to support more female causes. I'm doing this. And like you became a champion of, you know, feminist issues. Like I'd be like, yeah, hell yeah. How many men do that? It's not very common. So,
but
I mean, I think you're avoiding the whole, like, look at me, I'm an awesome person. And that makes you feel uncomfortable. But at the same time, like you have the ability to influence people and that's a lot of power at your hands.
Duly noted.
Oh gosh. That made me feel really uncomfortable.
Then leave it in.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. I like that, Chelsea.
Awesome. Hey, well, did we cover everything?
That's what Krista the Psychic tells me all the time, too.
Oh, that's not good. Did we cover everything from the whole, like, you know, finish him, Mad versus Chelsea face-off thing that we were trying to go for?
I think so.
Okay. Just wanted
to
double check.
I think this was great. So, oh, Chelsea, to make you – not just to make you feel better, but I hope this will make you feel better. I feel better about what you said tonight. I felt like you influenced me tonight. So,
awesome.
I think I get you. I think I get it.
So are you going to put a picture of Chelsea on a button and wear it around?
I will. Right. Yeah, sure.
You know what I would prefer rather than all of that? I want each one of you. I'm going to use a commitment pattern.
Do it.
Will
Do
each
it.
One of you oh, wow. put an ordained women profile up?
I already did.
Yay.
I haven't, but I'll do it now. Sounds good.
Yeah, I'll do it, Chelsea.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
That's awesome.
Sure.
And I'll make a fake one for Glenn.
Yeah.
Y'all sure. are pretty easy.
Oh, you have no
Should
idea.
Should we like hold out for more? Well, what are you going to give me?
Yeah. Yeah. I just don't want it to get me excommunicated. Can you? Never mind.
No, Glenn, you have no worries because our past indicates that men can pretty much do whatever the hell they want and not get excommunicated.
Yeah.
And women can be totally faithful and disagree with their authorities and get excommunicated.
Yeah.
For reasons that are not even highlighted in the Church of Ham.
But
it's unbecoming of a member, obviously. Right. So it means there's, you know, women have a different standard for what's right. becoming of them.
Exactly.
But
yeah.
Exactly.
But I want to push back on that a little bit, Chelsea.
Okay.
Because I think regardless of gender, Even the non-protest approach of saying, Kate saying, I've prayed about this. I felt in my heart, Jesus has told me that women already do have the priesthood. And brethren, all we're asking you to do is to pray about it too so that you get the same message that I have. Like, I think if that comes from a man or that comes from a woman, it's what is it? Blasphemy to the, it's insubordination to the leadership. And they can't not take action on something like that. Like I'm the one that's receiving inspiration for the church. And if you guys would only pray about it, if you guys would only have as strong of a connection to God as I do, then you'd know.
Well, and here's where I take issue with that
okay.
is because in all measurable ways, I mean, maybe that's ideally like, theoretically, that makes sense, and then everyone who would say that would get excommunicated. But in all measurable ways, I can give you a list of over 10 men who went to their leaders, who said the same exact thing as Kate Kelly, one who created Strangers in Zion, who said that called for their own disciplinary council, that said people should leave the church in spades.
Yeah, we have an
did not get excommunicated. We have an example of men.
You know why he didn't get excommunicated?
Preaching false doctrine and not getting excommunicated.
But
we have examples of, you know, there's crazy things men have done and not getting excommunicated.
Yeah, Micah got disfellowshipped because he asked, "Please don't throw me in the briar patch," and so they did it.
No, but he told.
He said, whatever you do, don't disfellowship me. Either excommunicate me or don't do any discipline. But please don't disfellowship me. And the stake president went, yeah, okay, we'll disfellowship.
Well,
you.
But to Chelsea's point, there. I mean, that's absolutely true. I mean, there, Micah. You know, and there's been other people too that have done
and Kate Kelly's husband
way worse things than what Kate Kelly's done by any like objective measure. And the difference is that, you know, I think gender was certainly one of the biggest differences. She's also the head of the organization and kind of the face of it. I think that probably played part of it too. But I mean, like things that John DeLynn has said, I mean, how does that not? It boggles my mind. So.
What we talk about is often that when a church leader and a man disagrees, it's kind of like, oh, we have a difference of opinion. Let's sit around and talk about it. I heard about Micah's disciplinary council, and there was a lot of back and forth, like, well, I think this, or I think that. When you listen to Margaret
Tuscany, that was like 7 hours long.
Right. When you listen to Kate Kelly's, Margaret Tuscany's, if you go back and listen to any woman's excommunication trial, the women aren't being, you know, Sonia Johnson, she has it all recorded. The women aren't given this liberty to be like, well, I think this and I disagree think this. It's very much like you aren't following my directive, insubordinate.
Yep.
It's almost it's patronizing, it's childlike. Like, because I said so, you have to do X. And if you're not listening to me, you're wrong.
Yeah.
It's not a, hi, my equal. We have a difference of an opinion. Let's talk about it.
Right.
Kate too, Kate didn't even get an equal process because it's a different process for how she was dealt with because she's a woman.
Right. Yeah. No.
I mean, she had three people instead of 15 people.
Yep.
Right. And she was, her records were held. They should have been moved. She told them 6 months in advance and her records were held in her old ward. So that's a little sketchy too.
Yeah.
So this is a good example though. I mean, you've convinced me. I'm going to create a profile. I'm checking out Ordained Women now. Maybe I feel slightly embarrassed that I've been following it for so long, but I've actually never been to the website till like this very moment. But beyond that, what's the next move? Like I would love to see, even though I'm on the outside and ostensibly I could, you know, one could assume that like, why do I care anymore? I would love to see this change happen. I would love to see this come to fruition. So what else is there to do? And can I do anything being on the outside other than create a profile?
Yes, you can. Let me tell you. So what we've done after Ordained Women, so what people don't understand is that behind the scenes, all of us are talking. People at WAVE, people at Exponent, Feminist Mormon Housewives, Nyland McBain, the conservatives of the world. Like behind the what comes out in organizational structure is that we're these like opposing organizations that stand for different things. Behind the scenes, we're all talking. We're all strategizing. I've been a part of all of these groups. And the next step, I think, but this is my own bias, is the push for ERA, the Equal Rights Amendment. I'm the president of that. We're going to start to like lobby, and that's going to be huge. And the reason why it's going to be huge is all of a sudden, all these post-Mormons and ex-Mormons that felt like they couldn't fully participate in Ordained Women because we kind of structured it as a faithful-based thing, who felt like they couldn't really help or they didn't have a really voice because they don't believe in the priesthood, therefore, what are they doing, right? Now it opens up a space for all of them. It also opens up a space for all these Mormons who are like, well, I kind of agree with you, but I don't think it's appropriate to protest our leaders. I don't think it's okay. The method, I don't disagree with the issue. I disagree with the method. So it opens up that space because we're not protesting church leaders. We're protesting the government, and everyone wants to do that. And one of the reasons I'm so excited about it is, you know, most scholars and historians will all agree that the ERA would have passed save Mormon opposition, that Mormon opposition at the time was the single factor that made it so we don't have an equal rights amendment. And so my goal in life, which I need a lot of you guys, a lot of post-Mormons, a lot of male allies to push forward, is that someday Mormon, whether you're active or post, we will someday make it so the ERA passes. So we will kind of right the wrong that our ancestors did, and we will be the people who lobby forth this change.
Okay. Okay. So where do we go to now? I want to, like, this is a part of history that I'm not as familiar with, and I want to learn more about it. So
there's a website called Mormons for ERA. If you go back kind of, and it's not super updated because we're still waiting for some of the legislation to pass in Congress and the House. So it's just slowly building, but it's kind of the next big thing. If you read a couple posts back, kind of gives you a history of the past, the present, and the future of the ERA, so you can kind of get a knowledge of what's happening. I know that this is very uncommon, and I understand that most of you are busy and you probably won't do it, but I highly, highly, highly recommend reading Sonia Johnson's book, From Housewife to Heretic.
So, Chelsea, you know, we'll do the profile on ordained women and stuff. Why don't you get some of these awesome women together and do some episodes on this stuff, like educate our listener audience on, you know, Mormon, whatever the website is that Bob asked about. We'll have some discussions about it, and we'll cool. raise the profile.
Yeah,
let's do it.
That is super easy. I could do that. You know, we'll totally do that. That's awesome.
So here's what I'd like to write for ordained women. You tell me if this is going to fly or not. On my profile.
Uh-oh.
Please give women the authority to activate Christ's dormant atonement too. Thank you.
I don't mind it.
You don't mind it. I love the little hint of
this effective versus true argument.
Right.
Okay.
Well, and I'm not sure that, like, I'm not in charge of, like, approving people's profiles. So, like, you might have to jump through a couple hoops.
That sounds really hierarchical.
Oh, I'm much too culturally relativist for that role, so.
Nice. All right. Cool. We should do more. Let's put a pin in it and bring it back.
And, Bob, like, if you want to do, like, episodes on Skyrim or Assassin's Creed, just do it, man.
Yeah, that'll change the world too, I'm sure of it.
My son would love that, and my daughter, big Skyrim fan. So
Skyrim is awesome, actually. I can concur. Good stuff.
I got one character to like a level 90 or something. I'm like, I'm putting way too much time in this, and I haven't gone back.
So, you're more of a gamer than I took you for. Look at that. Wow.
One of the reasons that I don't have my PhD like Chelsea has two. Is because
almost,
yeah. I was at almost for, like, it took me way too long to get my master's thesis, and I just saw the writing on the wall with my dissertation too. I was playing games, and Sid Meier's is the big part of that.
Games are awesome.
Cool.
Sorry, we went off on tangents at the very end.
No, it was good. It was really good.
This one, I recommend to any of you. A homeless guy asked me for a dollar the other day. And I was like, a dollar? How about 76 cents? Because that's how much a lady hobo would make doing the same job.
Homeless is the nigga of the world. Yes, she is. Think about it. If you don't believe it, take a look at the long
view. Hi, this is Sarah from Colorado Springs, Colorado, and I am an English girl hopelessly lost in a conservative American world. You can comment on this episode on the website infantsonthrones.com, and if you really like what you hear, give the quorum a 5-star rating and write a short review on iTunes. I did. Anyone for the closing prayer?
You have a record here that bears some explanation, because there's a bit of hassling going on as to whether or not it can be sung or not.
Yeah, there's always, every other record I seem to have a hassle with. Yeah. Well, this is a song about the women's problem. It was written by Yoko and I. And the song is called Woman is the Nigger of the World. And obviously there was a few people that reacted strangely to it, but usually they were white and male. But that's not... Now, I'll tell you the story of how it came about. in 1969, I put it on the cover of the single so it helps explain it a bit. Yoko did an interview with a woman about the woman's problem, and I didn't have anything to do with it. And then I noticed the cover, it was called Nova, it's an English woman's magazine like McCall's or something like that. And the first time I heard about it was I saw it on the cover of McCall's like that. And it sort of said, she, woman is the nigger of the world. Well, at the time, I was more of a chauvinist than I am now. And I must say, I was saying, well, come on, what about this and what about that? And I argued a lot. And then, as like everybody else, we talked more and more about it. In the last 2 years, it became more of a thing. And I had to, you know, find out about myself and my attitude to women. And this phrase of hers kept coming through my head, woman is the nigger of the world, woman is the nigger. So I said, come on, Yoko, look, this is it. You've said it here. I agree with you now. I think she is. She's the slave of the slaves. That's what Connolly said, the great Irishman. And so we sat down together and we wrote, we tried to write together the whole story of, as best we could in a 3 or 4 minute song. And it's called Woman is the Nigger of the World. And then luckily for me, because a lot of stations were saying, well, we're not going to play this because it says nigger and a white man shouldn't say it. Though all my black friends feel I have quite a right to say it because they understand it. And then, strangely enough, the chairman of the Black Caucus, that great guy, Congressman Ron Dellums, Democrat California, says here, he came out with this, which is fantastic. If you define niggers as someone whose lifestyle is defined by others, whose opportunities are defined by others, whose role in society is defined by others, then good news, you don't have to be black to be a nigger in this society. Most of the people in America are niggers.
Woman is the nigger of the world. Yes, she is. Think about it. Woman is the nigger of the world. Think about it. Do something about it. We make her paint her face and dance. If she won't be a slave, we say that she don't love. If she's real, we say she's trying to be a man. While putting her down, we pretend so hard that she's above us. Woman is the nigger of the world. Yes, she is. If you don't believe me, take a look at the one you with.
Thank you for listening to Infants on Thrones.